How you gon' stunt like you ain't been drunk? Yeah. Homie got the beam, yeah, the infrared tongue. Yeah. Throw it in the air, let it all come down. King got the underground, got the underground. Came with a girl, left with another girl. Yeah. Turn a hotel room to a wonder world. Only come down when the Uber downstairs. Shooting at the club, now everybody scared. If you get money, then you throw it in the air. Really get money, then you throw it in the air. Bad girl, she a bad thing.
Breaking news. Now over to our sideline reporter, Petey Buckets.
Screaming Dan Hurley has agreed to become the head coach at UConn.
Wow.
Leaving Rhode Island.
That's massive.
Big news in the A-10.
And why is that big news?
Because Rhode Island went to the tournament in consecutive years. They are a program that's headed in the right direction, or that was looking like it was, you know, really being set up for long-term success. Now you got to wonder how well they actually recover from this, if they're in a position to be, to follow that sort of VCU, that sort of Dayton model of just, you know, keep churning out new coaches and keep finding success.
And if they do go with their assistant coach, I'm blanking on his name right now.
David Cox looks like the front runner for the job. And it's funny that we're recording this right now. The AD actually has a press conference in 13 minutes.
Wow.
And there's a chance that they might announce him there.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to make the most sense if you want your program to continue on. Kind of like when I wish we would have kept Caputo. But, hey, who doesn't want to go to South Beach, Miami?
Right.
Cock it back down there. But why is it big news? I think, you know, Rhode Island was showing so much strength. Back-to-back years, they made it to the A-10 finals, had strong seasons. They beat up VCU 2 years ago in the tournament final. And made the tournament. March Madness, we're dancing back-to-back years, won a game
each season. Yeah.
They continue on?
Hurley was the guy who rebuilt Rhode Island. So Hurley wasn't a guy who stepped into a great situation. He did the rebuild. So whether or not the second guy can keep it going there is the question at the moment.
And I think, you know, the amount of money he signed for, you know, kind of shows the grind that he had to put through in Rhode Island and the confidence that UConn has from probably witnessing that process, because they want, you know, they've kind of sucked the last 2 years. So they're trying to get back to relevance. How much did he sign for?
$2.75 million in the first year, according to ESPN.com. And it's a six-year contract, and it sounds like it might escalate, so he might make over $2.75 million in the coming years here.
That's just pure insanity. Petey Buckets, if you got a contract for 1 year for $2.75 million, what is the first thing you're doing?
Yeah.
But what are you doing now? I'm buying a beach house. Like, the first thing I do, I got a boat, I got my fishing rods. Like, I'm set up for the summer.
Yeah, the beach house is a pretty strong argument, I think. I think I might go that direction as well.
Right. It's a no-brainer. I mean, some of us, like, you know, I love when, like, people just have stacks of money and they, like, do stupid, like, pictures where they, like, use it as a phone or use it as a back brace. Like, I would just throw money up in the air and just have it, like, fall, like, make it rain on myself. Like, I would not know what to do with $2 million. But I don't think we need to explain too much why this is not bad or why this is not good for the A-10. But UConn, though, I know he had a couple other choices. Mm-hmm. Would you have chosen UConn over Rhode Island, over Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think the argument, so put the money to the side. I think if you're, obviously in real life, you can't put the money to the side. But just for the sake of argument, if you take the money off the table and assume everything's equal at Pitt and UConn and Rhode Island, I think that UConn is the one place where you can still compete for national championships. I don't think you can really do that at Rhode Island. Pitt, their move to the ACC has just been a disaster. They can't out-recruit Syracuse, who's in their own backyard. They didn't win a single ACC game this year. They ran off Jamie Dixon a few years ago and ran him back to TCU after he had been very successful at Pitt. The problem was he didn't have any Final Fours there, that he hadn't made a deep enough tournament run for them to be happy. So they actually lowered his buyout and made it easier for him to leave, which is sort of a big, you know, middle finger in the coaching profession. And they're paying the price for it now. They actually tried to make a Godfather offer to Hurley. The reports are that he was offered over $3 million to go to Pitt, but Pitt fired Kevin Stallings, their head coach. 9 players have either decommitted from Pitt or announced their intent to transfer.
This year?
this year after Stallings was fired. So Pitt is just sort of a disaster right now. I think UConn
is Pitt pitiful.
Pitiful, pathetic, pathetic, or whatever. Whatever you want to put out there. I think that UConn has had a few bad seasons. I think if you're evaluating UConn, you don't want to overreact to the few bad seasons that they had under Kevin Ollie. But the big question there is that they're in the AAC, and the AAC is garbage right now. It's Houston, Memphis, Cincinnati, Wichita State, and UConn, and then those are the best five programs, and then beyond that, it's like Tulsa, Tulane, SMU, South Florida, and just a bunch of crap schools that aren't really going anywhere. So UConn of old, I think, was really compelling because they had those great rivalries with, you know, Georgetown, Syracuse, Villanova, but they've replaced that with some schools that nobody actually cares about. So you have to wonder how much UConn, as far as college basketball goes, UConn might be the biggest loser in all of college basketball with the realignment musical chairs that have been going on for the past 10 years. So I think long term, that's the concern with UConn. But I just read on Twitter that Hurley is actually going to bring in one of the guys who used to be an assistant to Jim Calhoun at UConn, maybe hoping to recapture some of the magic there. And, you know, in stores, you can recruit the New York City talent pipeline pretty well. Hurley's got ties all over the Northeast. So I think the argument for UConn over his other two options is that UConn is still a place you can compete for titles.
And Dan Hurley definitely got TV time during this tournament. I think they even had like a camera crew following them from Selection Sunday on. And so, you know, I don't think he's short. He's definitely a character. His facial expressions are wild. I haven't seen a guy attack the refs like him in quite some time. He's pretty much start to finish of the game, has a problem with somebody, and he does not hide it. I would argue, and it's hard to now argue your, like, you know, your full-on report with, like, a bibliography and sources, but I would say that if I had that choice, I would definitely always join the ACC. It doesn't matter what squad I'm going into. You know, I'm taking the opportunity to constantly play on the big stage, to constantly have the opportunity to get 7 to 8 to 9 bids into the tournament. And not just that, because you've seen examples of coaches come in and turn situations around, like Buzz Williams and our boy Jim Larrañaga. All of a sudden, I mean, Miami, I think maybe in his first or second year was a two seed in a tournament.
Miami wasn't on fire like Pitt is right now, though. And I think the concern if you're Pitt is that the ACC has some dregs, right? They have some teams that are consistently not very good and consistently don't make the tournament, even though the conference gets so many teams. Like, Pitt could become the next Boston College. They could become the next Wake Forest. They could, you know, it's not too unrealistic to see them, you know, becoming a perennial team.
Even
that
Wake Forest and Boston College have been to the tournament, though, in the past 5 years, right?
Wake Forest, maybe. I don't think so at Boston College. And then there's also, you know, Georgia Tech, funnily enough, is also on that list. But, I think that
they are on a different tier. Pitt is currently on a different tier than Tech and a Miami were when they were taken over. But you don't get Dan Hurley and pay him $3 million or $2.75 or whatever for a quick rebuild. I think, you know, you kind of proved it that he went through the grind at Rhode Island. And so, yeah, maybe it's, you know, you won't see too much short-term success. But just for the chance to compete with, you know, a Coach K, a Greg Williams, a Buzz Williams, you know, like Jim Bay, you're coaching against guys that are going to go down as the greatest of all time. I think it just puts you in that separate class. Obviously the job may not be as attractive based on talent. You just murdered their roster saying that 8 to 9 guys are leaving. That's obviously a massive hurdle to jump. But in my opinion, I think you always just, that's like,
and you can,
that's a pinnacle of college basketball.
And I don't want to undersell the rebuild job that I think UConn is going to require as well. I think that's probably why he got a six-year deal, is because it's going to take a couple years at least to turn it around. But Pitt, I think you're going to have to find, you know, find players who are still available, who still want to come to Pitt at this point in the recruiting process. Year one there is almost going to be a total punt, a little bit like what we saw with Paulson here at Mason. Year one is just... there's just nothing's going to happen year one. Year two, I think it's still going to be unlikely that you're actually going to get anybody or that you're actually going to see results at a place like Pitt. I think it's much easier to see some real results at a place like UConn in year two and year three than it is at a place like Pitt. I don't, you know, money aside, again, I don't envy whoever is going to end up taking the Pitt job.
And not to turn this into a Mason debate or a conversation, because that could obviously happen at any time, but I would argue that Dave Paulson's first year didn't need to be a punt. We had Marquise Moore, Jenkins, Marco, Siobhan Thompson. Some of these guys are still playing basketball in you know, higher leagues right now. Actually, I believe all four of those guys are playing basketball somewhere right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to compare us to Pitt or UConn or any of these other teams, because I actually thought some of our talent was there. But like I said,
it was, but we had a bunch of guys decommit after Hewitt left too, right? Yeah. I think we had, you know, and a lot of the guys who decommitted were probably clearly would have been the most talented people on the team. I think we had Trey Porter.
Who's balling?
Trey Porter is doing great at ODU. CJ Jackson never put on a Mason uniform, but he was committed to Hewitt. Now he's having a great career at Ohio State. I'm blanking on a couple other names.
Jackson.
Isaiah Jackson is the guy who went
and
to
Lockett
Providence.
And Lockett is now getting minutes. I forget where Lockett transferred
Eric
to.
Eric Lockett went to South Florida, Central Florida, one of the Florida schools.
Either way, they're all playing. And so
They're all playing and they're all doing well. So Mason just had a ton of talent leave after Hewitt was fired.
Would agree.
That's just sort of it's what happens, right?
And so, you know, as a Mason fan, as a Mason, you know, someone who covers and writes about the squad, mm-hmm. Is with the squad a lot, we would love to be in the tournament. And and so we did have in the A-10 three teams go to the tournament. You are our A-10 expert. That's why you're hopping on the podcast. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you saw from our three teams. Got a couple fun games in there. There's a win in there. Mm-hmm. So what'd you see from our performance? Obviously, we're out at this point.
Right. So yeah, if you're listening to this, it's already too late. The A-10 is out of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we represented about as well as we could have. I was really bummed that Davidson got the Kentucky draw.
Yeah.
Davidson wants to just shoot a ton of threes. And as we saw in the Rhode Island games, Davidson has trouble with the more athletic teams that can sort of press on the perimeter. And Kentucky has an elite three-point defense. I think Kentucky's top 10 in the country in terms of opponent three-point percentage. I think they hold opponents to about 29% shooting from three. And that's just a terrible matchup for Davidson. Peyton Aldridge was guarded by Hamidou Diallo, I think is his name, from Kentucky. Peyton Aldridge hasn't been guarded by anybody that athletic all season long. He was held to one of his worst games this season. So,
and they still had
that was
a chance.
Kind of a bummer. It was close. I think Kentucky pulled away in the second half. Davidson kind of came back. They actually were down like 10 or 12 with a minute or two left, and they actually came back to cover the spread and lose by five.
Yeah.
Which was, like, they acquitted themselves nicely. It was just kind of a bummer of a draw. Same thing with Rhode Island getting Duke in the second round. Rhode Island, they played a pretty good game against Oklahoma. Oklahoma, a lot of people debate whether or not they should have even been in the tournament. And I'm pretty glad that, you know, Rhode Island won that and was able to represent the A-10 pretty well. But in the second round, when they had to play Duke is just a physically overwhelming team. Rhode Island's weakness, I think, all year has been their front court. They have Andre Berry and Cyril Langevine, who are, you know, good players in the A-10. But when you're playing a front court of Wendell Carter and Marvin Bagley on Duke, those guys are basically aliens, and they didn't really stand much of a chance. I think Rhodey's game all season long was to be physically overwhelming, physically overpowering, and when they couldn't do that, we saw the results. They got boat raced by Duke.
Yeah, it wasn't close.
Yeah, and then
you wanted it to be, but you know, I think Rhode Island just had to live and die by the three. I think Barry had just a terrible performance in that game, and they needed some sort of presence inside Because I believe Duke went zone all game long, 2-3. Yeah. And so you needed to have someone in high post. And he got good shots in there, but they just weren't falling. And then Doughton didn't really play too well the whole tournament.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he's young and, you know, the bright lights, and he's going up against some of the best guards in the country.
Well, so zone kind of hurts Rhodey, because I just mentioned that their front court was kind of a weakness. But another weakness that they had was that there weren't a great shooting team either. I think they were around 35-ish% from three on the season. So they're not the kind of team that can shoot you out of a zone, right? And Duke plays a really good zone. Duke's a national title contender because I think about halfway through the season they committed to that 2-3, and it's the best fit for their personnel. And it helps them keep keep their two bigs on the floor and keeps them viable defensively when they run such a big front line like that. So that was kind of a bummer as well. I think there were two consecutive years that Rhode Island had a team that was good enough to make a Sweet 16, and they just dropped a heartbreaker to Oregon last year. Oregon ended up being a Final Four team, but I think Rhodey only lost that game by 3 points. And this year, they just get a really hellish matchup against Duke. They could have played. If you were watching that game, it wasn't just that Rhode Island had a bad shooting night or anything like that. It looked like they had no way to get stops on offense or stops on defense, and it looked like they had no way to just generate consistent looks on offense. I don't know if they play that game 100 times. I don't know if Rhodey even wins one or two of them.
I mean, it's no chance. Yeah. I mean, Duke looks primed for another national championship. And so it's, you know, when A-10 is running up against Duke and Kentucky, good night.
Right.
Kentucky's about to moonwalk to the Final Four. Their bracket is destroyed.
You think so? I think Kentucky-Gonzaga should be a great matchup. I think Gonzaga is really sneaky athletic this year. And,
but they're in separate brackets, right?
They're on the same. Are they? Oh, shit.
Well, we'll look up. This is great podcasting silence.
Welcome.
But I'm not sure. But either way, I think they would
meet
up.
Welcome to By George. We're not really sure which bracket's what.
Yeah. I think they meet up in. They would meet up in the Final
Four. That would be a Final Four matchup.
But okay. Look it up while I continue to talk about. Because we haven't really talked about St. Bonaventure.
We totally skipped them. I think that Bonnies, they beat UCLA in that play-in game, which I don't think they should have been in. I thought their resume was a lot better than that this year. But Courtney Stockard went nuts in that game against UCLA. He was the difference maker. He was absolutely great. And I think that the Florida game that the Bonnies ended up losing, I think that was a winnable game. It wasn't very close the whole time, but neither Mobley nor Adams played very well. And I think this Bonaventure team, you saw against UCLA what they could do. You basically saw their ceiling when Jalen Adams wasn't playing well in the UCLA game, when he had a second consecutive poor game against a better team in the tournament in Florida. Then there's just there's just only so much that they can do. They only have two other scorers to rely on with Mobley and Stockard. And if those guys aren't playing out of their minds, then, you know, there just really wasn't another option for the Bonnie. So it was a bummer to see Jalen Adams go out like that. He's been one of my favorite players for a few years now. But, the Bonnies had a great run. They won a game in the tournament, which is going to be good for their program long term. But just kind of a bummer. I felt like the A-10, I felt like Rhode Island and St. Bonaventure probably were good enough where they could have been Sweet 16 teams if they drew the right matchups, but it just didn't happen.
No, it's tough. I mean, add Florida to the mix.
Yep.
I mean, there's three pretty tough teams. The way this tournament's kind of shaken out, you could have really played a lower seed team, but it just didn't work out that way for the A-10. That's fine. I think just getting three teams in, continuing, the trend of three or more, hoping for four. We had five not so long ago. So just continuing to strengthen our conference as a whole, which I think is happening. If you look through a lot of teams, some benches were short, but you saw a lot of teams mature throughout this year, including Davidson, who ended up going on that run and getting themselves a tourney chance. And so I think, and PD talks about this a couple times, but teams like UMass, any other teams that you're seeing that could surprise us next year?
Yeah, I have no idea what to make of the A-10 next year. So it's interesting. I think that the teams that return, the teams that played well this year that return their starters are Duquesne, Richmond, Mason. I don't know if you really can trust any of those teams to sort of run away with the conference. UMass, I think, gets an influx of talent. I think they're going to be interesting because they've got a lot of transfers coming eligible, and I think Matt McCall is a great coach, but I think even great coaches have trouble getting guys to play well together in year one. St. Louis, VCU should put a ton of talent on the floor. I'm not really sold on either head coach, though. We've talked about Travis Ford. I'm not really a fan. Mike Rhodes, I think, was a little bit underwhelming this year. I don't know if VCU really played to the level of talent that they put on the floor. I don't know what's going on at Dayton. A bunch of players are leaving the program. It sounds like Costas might leave too.
Wow.
So I think that might start to look a little, you know, rebuildish next year. And then I think that there are just question marks all over the place. And now with Hurley leaving, Rhode Island's that great recruiting class that they put together is also in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just looked at a bracket, and I'm a dope. You're right. Gonzaga, Kentucky, if they meet, would be a matchup in the Final Four. Kentucky doesn't have to go through them. If Kentucky beats Kansas State, who they should beat, then they get the winner of the Nevada-Loyola-Chicago game, which right. That's an awesome story. I would love to see Loyola or Nevada get to the Final Four, but they're going to have to go through Kentucky most likely to do so.
Who looks like they're playing their best basketball at the perfect time?
People keep drawing comparisons to that team that actually lost to Kevin Ollie's UConn team in the title game, I think, back in 2014. And, you know, I think comparisons like that are a little bit lazy, but I think it's right on point in this case. It's a young team that just had a bunch of question marks coming into the season, so they're probably seeded properly if you look at the entire body of work that they had all season long. But geez, they look scary right now. They got a lot of athletes, a lot of really skilled players, and they're starting to click.
And you have the bracket up still, right?
I can get it back up, yeah.
So I believe they were in the same bracket as UVA.
They were.
A couple other, Tennessee maybe.
Yeah, it's
a couple other teams that are out.
Well,
so, I mean,
it was UVA and Cincinnati, I think, right. On that side of the bracket. So it was, you know, it's just funny that I think
the sea is parting for Kentucky.
The seas are parting, and I think that most people thought that they were going to, or that bracket was actually probably the toughest in the country, because I think in that bracket you had Virginia was the one seed, Cincinnati was the two seed, Tennessee was the three, Arizona was the four.
Those teams are out. That's so crazy. Arizona
was a sneaky popular Final Four pick just right. Because DeAndre Ayton is a monster.
In the NBA.
Right. They got upset in the first round. And then you even had quality programs like Miami. You know, Miami's the six seed and Kentucky's the five seed.
Yeah, it's a tough bracket, and Kentucky's now looking around like, who's left?
For there to just be so much carnage, I think, in that region of the bracket is, you know, clearly the biggest surprise of the entire tournament.
Right. All right, so that we talked Dan Hurley. I'd take Pitt, throw the money all over me. We talked A-10 teams. Pete, yeah. Unfortunately, it has to put the pants back on. Davidson right. Is out, lost to Kentucky. We did a random little Kentucky preview for you guys. I think that's about all we got. Yep. Petey, I'm going to throw you on the spot real quick before we leave.
Yeah.
Give them your Twitter handle and just kind of, you know, what you're doing, where you're writing, and why people should follow you.
Sure. I am on Twitter at PD Buckets. I try and stay connected to everything going on around the A-10 for the most part. So kind of, you know, taken off a little bit since all the A-10 teams are out. But there's going to be a lot of movement over the offseason, both with recruiting and with players transferring and leaving. Obviously, transfers are a big part of the college game now. So there's still a lot going on in the A-10 that's going to have an impact on next season. And follow me on Twitter if that's the sort of thing that interests you.
And we may have some big news coming up. Petey Buckets is going to start interviewing some people. Maybe we got a big silly coming up. You have to stay tuned, guys. Thanks for listening. We're out.